Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host, and I'm really happy to be joined for this episode by Adam Krantz. He is the CEO of the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. Adam, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Travis. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Excited to be here during Water Week, especially.
So yeah, I think that's the backdrop we should mention is we're here in D.C. for Water Week with hundreds of water professionals from different organizations in different parts of the country, all trying to make our voices heard to our elected officials and federal agencies about water. So we found a little break in the action to sneak to a side room here and chat. So
looking forward to it.
There might be some listeners out there or folks who aren't totally familiar with NACWA. Could you just kind of explain your organization and, you know, what your who your members are and what your mission is?
Absolutely. It's actually a great question. And you know, whenever we talk about our respective organizations in the water space or you're an association in any space, I think some humility is actually a really good place to start. Most people do not know who NACWA is, most likely outside of our water world, but we are the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. In terms of the clean water agencies part, we represent essentially the public wastewater and stormwater utilities across the country. About 350 or so of those utilities. And if you think about it, you know, largely, so we're it's a 501c6 organization, to get a little technical. C6 organization, unlike some of the C3s, which are educational in nature, we are a trade association and focused on advocacy. Okay. So that's what sets us apart. And when we advocate, we do so strictly on behalf of the public utilities that are out there, serving ratepayers across this country in terms of their wastewater services, stormwater services. I would say about 40% of those utilities are also provide drinking water services. They're joint utilities. So there is a lot of overlap in terms of how those issues work. But what sets us apart is our focus on the Clean Water Act, our focus on the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, USDA, Department of Ag a little bit. But really, strong advocacy-based organization, really focused primarily on the Clean Water Act as well as some of the other environmental statutes that impact our members as well.
Okay. Well, there's two things you kind of touched on there I want to follow up on. So two kind of questions. You mentioned, you know, there are a number of water associations or organizations, including mine, the Water Environment Federation. There were 13 of them basically represented at the congressional briefing today. What's the relationship between NACWA and the other associations like WEF, and what's the value to the water sector of having various organizations?
Really an excellent question. And frankly, you know, following up on this meeting, a lot of the officers from each of the key associations in that list of 13 are going to meet to talk in part about that issue, which is, you know, what are our unique strengths and how can we leverage those strengths? From NACWA's standpoint, we have a very distinct focus, one, on public wastewater and stormwater utilities, and two, on advocacy for them. And that keeps us very, very focused. It's my opinion the utilities in our sector are the drivers. They are the ones who 24/7 are doing the work to clean the nation's water and wastewater across this country. They're the ones hiring. They're the ones putting the money into technology. They're the ones being innovative in terms of their best management practices, in terms of technological approaches. So in my view, they need a specific and separate voice, in addition to which they are the regulated entities directly. So in terms of the amount of money that has to be spent in order to ensure our water is clean and safe, in terms of the statutory structure that's out there, it impacts them most directly. So I think, and I'll talk in terms of the other associations as well, but in terms of just an entity representing solely that interest, I think that's what sets NACWA apart from all of the other groups. That being said, we're also targeted, and comparatively to a Water Environment Federation or an American Water Works Association, fairly small and nimble. WEF performs a critical function and is a critical partner of ours. They bring so many more resources into the sector in many respects than what NACWA can do, in the sense that they represent all the voices, right, coming together. So you can be, you know, EPA, state regulators, it can be the operators from the utilities, it can be academia, right, and across the board along the wastewater spectrum of interests. And what WEP tries to do is to provide technical information to the utilities in terms of manuals of practice, things like that. But they also try to find messages that can resonate, in a sense, across the whole sector. So when we come to a place like Washington, D.C., we get, you know, the utilities and the utility CEOs, the heads of those utilities, to go take up the baton to Capitol Hill. But WEP can actually marshal resources of 30,000 members, right? 30,000 plus individuals. And that is a very powerful area. And it's an area that, frankly, in my view, you know, WEP can lean on us to make sure the utilities are a big part of their organization in a very specific way, in a useful way. They can look to us for a lot of the sort of advocacy work in terms of making sure that regulations make sense and legislation makes sense. We lean on them similarly to help us put it into a broader spectrum and to help take care of a lot of the technical issues, the technology issues. We're not involved in trade shows. We never will be. We're not trying to be, you know, sort of the voice of the entire range of interests, you know, across the sector. So I think we're very different, and yet we share what is obviously a love of water issues, wastewater treatment issues, how important sanitation is to our country. So in the biggest, broadest, most important sense, I think we're on the same page. And then you have, you know, a similar sort of array of interests, even well beyond that. The American Water Works Association, similar in some ways to WEP on the drinking water side. The Association of Metropolitan Water Agencies, sort of a similar version to us on the drinking water side. And my view is all of these organizations were developed for a reason, to fill a need that none of the organizations entirely on their own could fill. And there are very different statutory structures on both sides of that aisle that make, you know, advocacy tricky if you were trying to represent all those interests. Similarly on the technology side, similarly in terms of a messaging issue. So I think they've developed this way for a reason. I know there is a distinct interest sometimes in why can't we all just merge and become one sort of entity that's coordinated. I don't actually necessarily think that that is the only or best approach. You know, just if we can all be on the same page, leveraging our respective strengths together on behalf of all of our members, whether shared or not, I think that is the best way to flex our muscle. NACWA helps to organize Water Week right here in D.C., which is a very focused sort of advocacy week where we try to all show that we're all on the same page relative to the importance of water and wastewater services up on the Hill. And by doing so, you know, I think all organizations get a benefit of trying to raise the water issue to a top priority for Congress, right, and making sure we don't hear a lot about highways, airports, aviation, hospitals, schools. I think only by sort of acting together and leaving our egos behind, you know, do we have a real shot at starting to make water that top priority that it deserves to be.
Well, I like that one of the big points you made there is that we all the different water organizations have a specialty and they have a niche. And when we come together, I mean, I think at this congressional briefing that was held today, you heard people on the same page. When it boils down to it, you know, it's public health, environment, and our workers out there and all that stuff. So it's nice to see that.
It is really nice to see. And you know, we talk about 13 groups being part of Water Week, and some groups have been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. WEP has been around, right, for a very long time. NACWA has been around 50 years. Mm-hmm. AWWA around for a long time as well. There are also newer groups that are with new leadership that I think are starting to play a bigger role.
Yeah.
The U.S. Water sure. Alliance, which is trying to get outside of sort of the water sector and try to get water groups linked up with outside interests, corporate interests, agricultural interests, folks who rely on water in a bit of a broader way. I think that's an interesting group. Water Reuse, for example, is a group that's part of what we do with a very specific interest, right, in terms of water reuse advocacy. And trying to move toward a greater appreciation and acceptance of reuse and recycling, which is specific. So I think across the board here, what we're starting to see is I think a very beneficial trend in our industry, which is very thoughtful leaders who are starting to say to themselves, our organization is not the, you know, end-all and be-all for the sector, that we have a particular niche that we're filling, like you said, but that if we can all raise our voices wherever we can, and it's not just in the policy arena, it can be in the technology space, together, seeking the same things and the same solutions and then sharing great information amongst all of our respective members, what we're finding is that that's the recipe for success.
Yeah. Well, let me follow up also on kind of, you know, what you've identified as really your biggest specialty with NACWA, and that's the advocacy piece. And I kind of want to get your thoughts on the political will on water right now. And, you know, what do you think is the willingness of elected officials, especially at the federal level, to act on water resources, water policy, water investment?
So it's a great question. I would say a couple things. First, you know, this past year, even the last few weeks, have demonstrated again, in line with you know, past history, that water is a uniquely bipartisan issue. It is not the type of issue that you're going to hear a lot of chest thumping over from one party or the other. I think everyone pretty much understands that water is basic to life, to public health, to environmental health, and nothing exists without it. So it has, it also has a spiritual connotation to it that I think people really sort of leave out of some of the partisan wrangling that you're going to hear. It's so basic and critical. And I think you see that in terms of the groups who come, you know, here to town and recognize that whatever the political situation and you know, politics always change and shift, continuing to raise these issues is important. We're seeing a spike in attendance in terms of Water Week every year, year over year. We're also seeing a very large spike in Capitol Hill visits associated with Water Week, as well as visits actually to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to get them involved. And it's my view, the last few weeks we saw an omnibus package pass, where there was a plus up in funding for the state revolving funds by $600 million, unheard of, 20+%
unexpected.
Increase, unexpected, one would think, right? Same with WIPIA, getting more money than it was authorized for, $64 million, and they can leverage into several billion dollars in projects. And more, in a whole bunch of different areas, farm-related, rural-related funding, all looking fairly good in terms of its impact on the water sector. So what we're actually seeing is you can't foresee, you know, when or how you're going to get these funds. And I can tell you right from experience, it could be the economic downturn, right, under the Obama administration. And then we saw the ARRA. Stimulus package come together with the largest single year injection of funding for water that we had seen up to that point. And now, you know, here we are again under a Trump administration where there was clearly a lot of fear in terms of what that would mean for environmental programs, for EPA's budget, you know, and the only truth that I've been able to ascertain through all this is you cannot read tea leaves. And so if the whole industry and the groups that we represent, right, can hang together, good things ultimately happen. Whereas if you start getting sort of nervous or cynical, that's when things start to fall apart. And I think the sector as a whole is in a really good place right now. And my hope is, you know, in terms of talking about the will of Congress and our elected leaders to deal with water issues, I actually think we're in a really good place. We heard yesterday from Dave Ross, who's the Assistant Administrator for Water. We haven't had an Assistant Administrator for Water in that position for years, basically now, at Actings. Someone who used to, you know, work at a wastewater treatment plant, right, gets these issues, understands them. And I think we're going to have a really good working relationship there with our regulatory agency as well as with Congress that's proving, you know, above and beyond doubt that we just don't have a crystal ball. Mm-hmm. We just have to be prepared and on the same page and singing from the same song sheet. So I'm optimistic about where we're going with the water. And $600 million or $64 million for WIPIA, these are nice sounding numbers, but they're not enough.
Well, that was my, I was going to ask next is, I know that today, and this will be aired later, but as we sit here on, what, April 17th or 18th, that folks are going around visiting their congressional offices, and they kind of have a short list of things that they're saying these are really the four or five items we need in the water sector, and those include increases for the SRFs and increases for WIFIA. So as you just said, those numbers that came with the omnibus were nice, but the water sector wants more.
Absolutely. I mean, just to give a sense,
needs more.
I would just say it's really important to step back a little bit. When you think about in our country, we have 55,000 drinking water utilities, somewhere in the neighborhood of 15,000 wastewater treatment plants. There is not a sort of one size fits all, you know, approach there. You're getting some very sophisticated utilities, but the vast majority of these utilities are small utilities, some of which, you know, not many of which are having compliance related issues. And don't have a rate base, you know, that they can lean on in order to get the work done. That being said, the public utility sector as a whole is investing, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, about $100 billion per year.
Wow, I have not heard that.
Wastewater. So okay. $100 billion.
And that's the public sector.
That's the public sector. So that's rates and then bonds.
At the local level.
At the local level, okay. Across the country. Compare that to we're talking about a $2 to $3 billion injection in the form of loans through the SRFs from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that to me says everything you need to know. Right, it's 97% to 3%. That 3% still has to be paid back largely with some interest. Right, so it's not free money. It's not grant money. So what we really do need to continue to work on and to sort of get into the frontal lobes, if you will, of our members of Congress is that disparity, right? And if you actually look at the cost of regulations, not just the cost of aging infrastructure, which is nearing $1 trillion, if not more, over the next 20 years, you look at the cost of regulations, right? That imbalance is even more stark. And my view has always been for Congress is to the extent it's important to legislate and regulate over, right? And it's going to cost us significant money. 3 to 97% cost share is completely insufficient and quite frankly insignificant in certain respects. It's important and critical.
Yeah.
But we've got to start seeing it build. So the $600 million in additional SRF money is a start, right? A 20% plus up in this kind of a budget environment is a start, right? But we got to see a lot more of that in order to really start to see a long-term, meaningful federal, state, local partnership on water.
Well, that's a bit of a good segue to what I want to launch into here. And that's that, you know, when it comes to advocacy, NACWA has four areas of focus. And I think the first one kind of goes into exactly what you were saying. So maybe you can elaborate even a little bit more or kind of what you're trying to do. So it's about how we pay for clean water in an era of being asked to do more with less. So you've provided some good information on that, but anything you want to add to that?
Well, it's two sides of the same coin. So funding is obviously one side. If you want to do more, it's going to cost more. So we all have to start putting in significant money. The municipal sector, right? The public utility sector is always going to be the lion's share of the funding, right? We've got to start charging what we call the full cost of water, right? The full value of water. And that involves a change in mindset across the board. But if you do start to do that, right, and you start thinking about replacement cycles and wanting to go from a 200-year replacement cycle to a 100-year, right, and then you talk about operations and capital projects associated with all this and regulatory compliance, right, you start getting into much bigger numbers. So if you want to chart the full cost of water, right, and you actually are going to really take a serious look at that, all that's going to do, right, is underscore the fact that there has to be a lot more money through the system. So the flip side, too, is being a little bit more thoughtful about regulation, right? That is a big driver of cost for utilities, and we have been, alongside WEP, been great partners in this and other organizations as well on integrated planning-type efforts in terms of the utilities being able to prioritize over time, right, their regulatory compliance requirements.
rather than having them siloed by Clean Water Act, Safe Drinking Water Act? Could you explain that a little
bit? Sure, that's a great point, guys. There's the statutory, but even just under the Clean Water Act, right? You're going to be dealing with nutrient issues. You're going to be dealing we've had a dental amalgam rule passed, pre-treatment program requirements. You're going to be dealing, even now we're looking at the phosphate issues on the drinking water side that are going to have big impacts in terms of phosphorus removal on the wastewater side. Mm. And you can go down just a long laundry list, stormwater requirements that are now adding up, phase one, phase two requirements under stormwater regulations. So our utilities are just facing one thing after another, TMDLs, right? And each of those things has a significant cost associated just under the Clean Water Act.
Right.
Okay. Say Drinking Water Act drivers, right, are in addition to that. And it's all the same ratepayers, right? So at some point or other, true integrated planning, one won't just be looking at your Clean Water Act stormwater related costs, right? So your wastewater, stormwater, will be looking at drinking water too. And then looking at things at what really is the public health, environmental health priority. To spend money on where you're going to get the biggest bang for the buck. How long is it really going to take, right?
What is happening with this particular utility? What right. projects do they have going on now? Exactly. What are their challenges?
What's right. affordable to both that from the household standpoint and from the utility affordability standpoint? So these types of issues now are starting to really be discussed, I think, in a really meaningful way that's going to lead to some significant changes in terms of how EPA does business, both from a regulatory standpoint and enforcement / compliance assistance standpoint. And that's another interesting area. NACWA is really pushing very strongly for a compliance assistance point of view, right? The office at EPA is called the Office of Enforcement and Compliance Assurance. Mm-hmm. It used to be Compliance Assistance. They changed the name for obvious reasons. what we'd like to go to is help us to comply first. Let's try to help folks comply, figure out the best strategies to do that before you're engaged in an expensive enforcement action that may deal with, sort of daily enforcement costs and payments, right? Mm-hmm. So let's be partners in it. Our goal is all the same, whether you're a local official, right? Whether you're a state official or whether you're a federal official, we all want to see compliance. We all want to see sustainable water services, clean and safe water for all of our citizens on an equal basis with full equity. So let's focus in on compliance rather than a strict sort of stick approach.
Yeah. Well, the integrated planning is very interesting to me. I worked at EPA when kind of that nebulized a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know, 4 years ago, five years ago.
Right. Yeah,
and so it's kind of picking up a little more momentum again under this administration.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you hit on kind of the first two areas of focus, I think, with how we pay for clean water and smarter approaches to regulation and enforcement. One of your other areas is advancing and promoting innovation in the municipal clean water arena. So what's your focus there?
So NACWA started an effort and an initiative alongside WEF and the Water Research Foundations called the Utility of the Future Initiative. The idea there is, especially on the wastewater side, I think this is primarily true, through innovation, you can actually start seeing the waste stream, which is a terrible name for it, being anything but a waste stream,
right?
Being sort of a resource stream. If you looked at from, the actual effluent itself being recyclable, reusable water, right? Mm-hmm. To go back into the system, including biosolids that are taken out of that stream, now being able to be used as a fertilizer during a period where we're going to be entering an international phosphorus shortage very soon, mm-hmm. in terms of mining for phosphorus, coupled with the energy that you can derive out of that waste stream, let alone metals and other things that you may actually find in the waste stream that are valuable. I think we're starting to look at a very different picture for what a wastewater treatment plant is. And I know as part of that process, I think WEF sort of moved toward calling all of the utilities resource recovery agencies, right? And I think that is very, commendable, the language that we use to reflect the direction that I think our utilities are going in and utility leadership. So the issue is, how do we incentivize that? How do we allow the utilities potentially a little bit more space, a little bit more room on the risk side, right, in order to try to do something on the technology side, on the resource recovery side.
Instead of being so worried about, I mean, they have to make sure the public health is protected,
have to make
right?
Sure they comply. But there are ways to pilot and create safe spaces and safe havens, right, for new technologies in a way that can be beta tested and in a way that also can be proven without having, you know, to have, you know, your regulated entities say we can't assume the risk with you, we can't be a partner in this, you know, you can't do any of this, there can be no innovation.
Mm-hmm.
The tried and true is the only way to do this. Well, that's a recipe for, you know, complete stagnation and just doing things the same way always. And we're seeing utilities doing amazing things, and not just on the technological side, but also in terms of management approaches, going upstream to deal with farmers, right, as a means of dealing with nutrient pollution at a much often cheaper rate than what they would do if they had to put technologies in their plants. But there are no regulatory structures,
right,
in many instances at the state or federal level to both incentivize this, apply it, and create safe places for these types of technological efforts and innovative management approaches. So the utility of the future concept is meant to do a couple things. One, to move policy in the right direction in terms of allowing the utilities to become 21st century innovators, as well as an awards program, right, that we have at WEFTEC every year now, that basically showcases the best types of activities in this space, resource recovery, you know, to our, within our country, and now we're going into an international mode on that for the world, so that others can emulate what is working, understand what some of those technologies may be that are actually tried and true and that they might not be aware of, that they can then, you know, put into their systems and begin to implement too. And then you create a system, right? And I like to call it peer-to-peer partnerships, where whether you're small utility, medium-sized utilities, large utilities, as you see how others have solved the problem that you may have, right? And you may have no idea, you know, absent these types of discussions, that someone else has had the problem and solved it, that you start to see a rising tide for the entire sector. And that, to me, is what we're after. In Water Week, for example, you know, we're sitting here, and while we're here, all these different groups are going up to the Hill. They're all arguing for what they need relative to their own mission,
mm-hmm.
as it should be. Self-interest is still the greatest motivator, but they're going to do it with a gloss of what the whole sector needs and raising water up as a priority. Right, and talking about innovation, talking about the need for some space to innovate, to bring in new technologies, to rethink our whole sector in terms of resource recovery. And I think that's super exciting. George Hawkins talked about it a little bit you know, at our congressional briefing today, you know, talking about how that's the way to you know, get young people excited, and even older people re-excited and re-energized coming into our sector. And so I think it's a very exciting time.
The last area I want to ask you about, I think, intersects with these three prior areas, and this is about you know, how we modernize the Clean Water Act to account for the challenges of today and the years to come. And so, what do you mean by that? And like I said, I think that crosses over with some of the things you just mentioned.
It's a great question. I think the Clean Water Act and the Safe Drinking Water Act, essentially, what we're starting to see is a lot more overlap amongst both. In other words, if you're going toward resource recovery and water recycling and water reuse, you're essentially becoming a drinking water agency, right? And if you're a regulated drinking water utility doing X, that may have a very large impact now, you know, in terms of your wastewater treatment requirements and what you're finding in your waterways. So I think one thing we need to start thinking of is water from the entire cycle, you know, and not sort of separate this out in terms of what you drink and what you're, you know, returning to the natural environment and your surface water and groundwater. So I think from one standpoint, the environmental structure for water needs to be rethought on a watershed basis with ideas like integrated planning, real affordability issues sort of hardwired in, right? And I also think a big part of that, and this is something I've been pushing very hard since becoming CEO a few years ago, you know, really is this notion of 50 years have gone by since these statutes have passed. The utility leader, you know, isn't sort of a new person trying to figure things out anymore. Their teams have 50 years of experience figuring out what works, figuring out what doesn't, and where they would like to innovate. And I think at some point or other, right, the acts need to stop taking a complete command and control type structure, right, with zero sort of acknowledgement of cost benefit, right, on the Clean Water Act side, and start to think of the utility at the local level as an equal partner, with the state and the federal government. You know, they already have under the Clean Water Act the ability to run pretreatment programs, which means they can regulate industry. So they're trusted to regulate industry. But as it relates to doing, prioritizing their own requirements, right, really having a say in terms of what their permit, right, looks like, they have input into it, but to really be able to put plans forward that are thoughtful, meaningful, do account for their ratepayer priorities and be getting the biggest bang for the buck and doing the most environmentally that they can and looking across safe drinking water, wastewater, stormwater issues and figuring out, you know, what really, you know, should the money be put after first, right? And then, you know, that would require a bit of change in terms of the actual structure of the statute. That being said, most people misread the Clean Water Act and the Safe Drinking Water Act for simplicity's sake, whether it's an enforcement official wanting to get something done or a permit writer, right, wanting to figure out a general permit that you can throw everyone into, you know, and not have to think about unique, you know, scientific issues relative to different water bodies in different cities. One other option is really to reread and reinterpret the Clean Water Act as it is to maximize the type of flexibility that one could read into it and make some tweaks or changes, right, to do that in a way that is still completely protective of the public, because no one wants to move in a direction that isn't protective entirely of the public, but allows for that type of flexibility for the utility to maximize its investments.
So is that a combination of legislative and even judicial action around the Clean Water Act?
So I'm threefold. I think it's legislative in part, because there are some places you're going to need clarification, and I think you can find it on a bipartisan basis. And integrated planning is actually a really good example of that, right? The term's not used in the Clean Water Act. It doesn't mean that you're not allowed to do it in the Clean Water Act, but what does it mean, right? Does EPA have to, you know, if the utility puts together an integrated plan, do they have to look at it? There's nowhere, right? So what does that mean? So absent some changes, then yes. So there's a legislative component. EPA can do a lot on its own through guidance, right? Through frameworks like the integrated planning and affordability frameworks they put together a few years ago. They have a lot of leeway, a lot of authority to do that. And then the third is through the courts when needed, you know, as a last resort, right?
Yeah.
The clarity you can't find from the other two avenues in the right time frame or whatever. So I think all three are needed here, and I don't think, you know, right now, you know, I'm not going to send my members up, and I think other organizations are saying, let's revamp, right, let's get rid of the Clean Water Act, we need new environmental statutes. I don't think we've laid the groundwork enough to really start to get to that, but we are hearing, you know, certain tweaks, certain things that can provide some of that balance between the local, state, and federal interests. Right, the utility at the ground level and recognizing them, right, as the experts in a more meaningful way, and providing more trust, right, in their judgment and their capacity. So I think that's also exciting.
Yeah.
We need to build on it as an entire industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, it definitely seems like we're in an exciting transitional time for the water sector, and a lot of the points you made and topics you discussed here today certainly underscore that. So, Adam, I appreciate the time, the conversation, really interesting. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Travis, thank you very much. Great conversation, and look forward to, you know, having this water we continue to grow and all the groups working together. It's the best of all possible worlds.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Words on Water.